At a time when this country was deeply divided, North against South, a religious man took up arms. He was passionately anti-slavery. His name was John Brown. Brown led a dramatic and violent raid on the South, in Virginia, with support from Northern abolitionists, and with that action, inflamed citizens on both sides of the slavery divide. The Civil War broke out soon after. WYSO Public Radio in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and the Living History Theater present Sacred Fire, John Brown's Raid on Harper's Ferry, Virginia, next on this public radio station.
It is early October 1859 in Boston, the center of abolitionist activity. The movement to end slavery is growing desperate. The outright abolishment of that particular institution is becoming more and more unlikely. No matter what is said, written, or done, the slave system seems unshakable, the very foundation of the Southern way of life. Then old John Brown arrives in town, riding in from bleeding Kansas with a Bible in one pocket and a pistol in the other. He had come to Boston to lecture on the evils of slavery. Mr. Brown also came to solicit financial support for a rather vague plan he described as troubling Egypt. Those in his audience with religious inclinations knew that as a reference to the command that Moses go forth into Egypt to free God's people from bondage. The abolitionists of the city judged it a strikingly symbolic allegory. They are very intelligent and very well educated and very comfortable with symbolism. John Brown left Boston with the contributions and blessings from abolitionists who were vague as to the exact details of his future plans. However, Mr. Brown had struck them as a sincere and forthright gentleman with a genuine desire to do what he could to hasten the end of slavery. If his efforts got the righteous cause some notice, it would be all for the better. Over 400 miles to the south in Virginia, Mr. Brown's plan to trouble Egypt unfolded in a small town called Harper's Ferry. Harper's Ferry was a peaceful, small community nestled in the mountains of Virginia. If the town had any distinction at all, it was as a weapons manufacturer and storage depot for the United States military. This gave the citizens good, steady employment. While Harper's Ferry was in a slave state, it had only a few slaves in the general area. There was no great need for them. It was a shock, therefore, when the citizens of Harper's Ferry awoke one morning to a slave revolt on their very doorsteps. For 2 days, the battle raged, while the entire country watched in horror and disbelief. The Virginia State Militia was overwhelmed. The governor begged for federal troops to secure their arsenal before the slave revolt grew out of control, unleashing unthinkable horrors upon the good citizens of Harper's Ferry and beyond. There were countless rumors, and they could have all been true. For if a slave revolt could happen in a town like Harper's Ferry, it could happen anywhere.
You, sir, move back to safety at once.
Seem to have them rebels boxed in rather well, Colonel. Appears they're trapped in that engine house. Excellent work.
It is not over yet, sir. I can assure you of that. What are you doing out here?
I understand you are in command, Colonel Robert E. Lee of the United States Marine Corps. Just a few questions, sir.
I do not wish to be discourteous, but I am currently occupied with my professional duty.
I am as well. I'm William J. Evanston, Washington correspondent for the New Orleans Tribune. I got here as quickly as I could, but I seem to be here at the end of this affair. Is it true this was a slave uprising?
We have just arrived. We are still assessing the situation.
Colonel Lee.
Your report, Lieutenant Stewart.
Rode the entire length of the town, located the bodies of five rebels, no more than that. My guess is an equal number escaped. There has to be only a few in the engine house.
Are you saying this major threat to the state of Virginia numbered perhaps 20 men or so?
Only 20? How could they have held off the state militia for so long? Why the governor of Virginia need to call in federal troops to assist in this battle?
Lieutenant Stewart, hold up a white flag of truce. Inform them that if they put down their weapons and release their hostages, they will be allowed to surrender unharmed.
Yes, sir, Colonel Lee.
Why, they're holding their fire. I wonder if they're willing to surrender.
It just may be that their curiosity has gotten the best of them. Lieutenant, try to get a look inside. See how many there are, if their hostages are still alive.
Yes, sir.
Well, look, someone's coming out.
Let us see if we are dealing with reasonable men. They must understand the hopelessness of their position.
Well, look at that old man. He is their leader? Well, he looks like my grandfather.
He and his men held off hundreds of armed men before we arrived.
Appears to be giving the lieutenant an earful. He is not negotiating anything.
He is going back inside. It appears we shall end this in a less than desirable manner.
Colonel, their leader, I know who he is. Old Osawatomie Brown, the one who has given us so much trouble in Kansas.
Colonel, I believe that answers your question about reasonable men.
They told me they will not surrender. He and his men would rather die than live in a country that tolerates slavery.
Then I suggest you accommodate his wishes.
Colonel, I did get a look inside. Only four or five left, both white and black men.
White men? Participating in a slave uprising?
And the black men were not slaves. They were dressed like gentlemen.
Gentlemen? Now, are you sure of that?
Lieutenant, we need to ensure the hostages are not harmed.
And the rebels?
The offer of mercy was extended and formally rejected. It is therefore withdrawn. Do what needs to be done to secure that building as quickly as possible.
The men will understand, sir.
As federal troops stormed in, John Brown fought on, surrounded by his dead and dying followers. Just four men stood with him at the end. The battle concluded. A badly wounded John Brown was dragged to an empty room, and dozens of soldiers and civilians crowded in to shout questions at him. Reporters described him lying on the floor like a broken-winged hawk, with a fearless eye and his talons set for future fight if need be. "Upon what principles do you justify your acts?" shouted someone in the crowd.
"It's my sympathy with the wronged and the oppressed, as good as you, and as precious in the sight of God."
Those who had captured him had little patience with his theology and demanded where was his army, who else was involved, and most of all, why. To this, he said nothing. Instead, the dying old man judged them.
"I wish to say that you had better, all of you people of the South, prepare yourselves for a settlement of this question. You may dispose of me very easily. I am nearly disposed of now. But this question is still to be settled. The question of slavery. The end of that is not yet."
The citizens of Harper's Ferry were amazed to discover that the notorious Kansas raider, Osawatomie Brown, had for months lived among them in a rented farmhouse across the Potomac River. The quiet old farmer had fit well into their peaceful community as he planned his murderous raid. He preached in a local church, gave his neighbors advice on raising sheep, and took long, healthy walks through town, all the while as he slowly and steadily gathered together his army. Anger began to replace surprise as the Southerners came to see their abolitionist enemies in a whole new light. Who else waited patiently, planning even more outrages against them?
Well, Mr. Evanston, this is it. This was the hideout.
I'm surprised. Nice, big farmhouse. Do you mind if I take a look around inside?
Well, not much to see. They stockpiled weapons upstairs. We confiscated them, and then folks have been sneaking in and taking everything else John Brown had. You'd think the circus was in town.
Lieutenant, you'd be surprised the extent of curiosity the public has for matters that are none of their business. It explains my entire profession. Hey, what's this on the floor?
Just an old travel satchel. Boys found it upstairs in a drawer.
Why, look at this. Shipping invoices. Did you find any farm equipment?
No farm equipment, just boxes full of weapons. Well, the signatures authorizing these invoices are all the same. Franklin Sanborn.
Sanborn? I know him. A young man from Boston who shows up before Congress to rant on about abolitionism. Should be teaching farm folk their book learning. Instead, he uses abolitionism to ingratiate himself to the Boston elite. They set him up with his own private school. Successful young man, Franklin Sanborn. He's either a shameless opportunist or very idealistic, and I'm not sure which one of it it is.
He authorized a lot of shipments. Last one 3 days before the raid.
What a nice, expensive, cream-colored envelope. I think we're free to read the gentleman's mail at this point. A bank draft for $30? A note wrapped around it. He says, My dear John Brown, enclosed is a small token of our support. Our thoughts with you in your glorious adventure. Sincerely yours, Dr. Samuel Gridley Howe. What would he be doing involved with a cold-blooded killer like John Brown?
Well, obviously sending him money. Look at this. Some sort of expense sheet. Look at the margin. Copies to G. Smith. GLS.
G. Smith? Well, that's Garrett Smith. He's one of the wealthiest men in the country. And GLS would be George Luther Stearns. Now, he made a fortune manufacturing lead pipes. Cornered the market in pig iron for a while. Why, then he turned to good works, as I recall. Must be less competition there, I suppose. This certainly answers the question how John Brown could afford a raid on Harper's Ferry. Here, let's make a nice, neat stack of incriminating documents. Is that everything?
Oh, here, one more thing. Right in this little side pocket, photograph. Quite a little honey.
Well, look at her. Gaze at this, and always you will see a friend, Louisa May Alcott.
Well, is that another Boston admirer?
Indeed. How a horrible man like John Brown made the acquaintance of the lovely poet Miss Alcott. These people are New England abolitionists. You know, they're in their parlors and drawing rooms debating energizing ideas. They're annoying, but they're not dangerous like John Brown.
Well, Mr. Everson, do you want to look through the rest of the house?
No, thank you, Lieutenant. I believe I've seen everything I need right here. I'm returning to Washington, but I think this turn of events deserves a little trip to Boston. I would love to have a chance to meet these people in person.
John Brown and the rest of the survivors of the raid on Harper's Ferry were quickly arraigned for trial. Of his future, there was no doubt. But the country wanted to know more. There had to be more. 2 days after the raid, his supporters opened their newspaper to see their correspondence to John Brown published on the front pages. As John Brown was cooling his heels in a Virginia jail cell, the intrepid reporter, Mr. Evanston, was cooling his in a more opulent circumstance. The front parlor of a stately mansion owned by Garrett Smith. He was hoping for an interview that Mr. Smith seemed oddly reluctant to give.
To my devoted readers and those whose eyes may fall upon my writing for the first time, if the raid on Harper's Ferry took place in Virginia, then why come to Boston? Because this is where the raid really began. Boston is the home for the abolitionists, and why not? Abolitionists have a lot in common with Puritans. Bound and determined to do the Lord's work here on earth, even if everybody else prefers that they did not. So I'm here to watch the abolitionist rats scurry and hide in their little holes. Ah, I see a carriage coming up the drive.
Samuel, why are we paying a visit to Garrett so early in the morning? Is this sudden social call regarding John Brown?
Why would you think that?
The stack of newspapers beside you. The ones with Harper's Ferry in every headline. Samuel, they are writing of hanging him. All of the survivors. What are we to do?
There will be a compromise. Something can be arranged. An insanity plea, perhaps.
How is that possible? Everyone in the country is in an uproar about the raid. How can you say you know nothing about it? How exactly are you going to resolve this?
There is nothing for me to resolve.
Look up there. Do you see? There's a man looking at us through the front window. Look at his gold vest. I've never seen anything so gaudy in my life. He has to be a southerner.
They may have arrested Smith.
Perhaps we should leave.
He has seen us. It would look strange if we were to climb back into a carriage after just getting out. Remember, we have nothing to hide.
Of course we have nothing to hide. You certainly would have told me if we did.
Good morning, sir. I happen to see you come in. Allow me to introduce myself. I am William J. Evanston, newspaper man. Current employment is with the New Orleans Tribune. An excellent newspaper, if I say so myself. I recommend it only because you seem an avid reader. Looks like you have at least a dozen newspapers there under your arm. I must apologize. I did not get your name.
I did not give it. I am Dr. Samuel Gridley Howe.
Dr. Howe, I know a great deal about you, sir. You are the director of the Perkins Institute for the Blind. You developed a method of communicating with deaf blind mutes by tapping on their hands. You're convinced that blind children can read by feeling bumps on paper. I've heard it said Boston is full of eccentric occupations.
We prefer to think of ourselves as visionaries.
In the eye of the beholder, and this lovely lady must be your wife, Julia Ward Howe.
You know my name. You have heard of me.
All admirers of great poetry have.
Thank you for your kind words. We are here to visit with Mr. Smith.
A social call in the early hours of the morning in the midst of a political turmoil. You are certainly an industrious people. If you see Garrett Smith, would you do me the courtesy of reminding him that I am waiting? I believe Mr. Smith is in the library. He may have been distracted by a young minister who rushed in shortly after I arrived. The need to provide spiritual comfort and counseling probably explained his mad dash up the steps.
Thomas, he is here.
Reverend Thomas Wentworth Higginson, that was him. God save the South from any more earnest young Unitarian ministers.
What did you say?
My impatience has led to rudeness. My apologies, sir.
I will give Mr. Smith your card. I cannot say if he will see you or not.
Your effort is all I ask. Good day, Dr. and Mrs. Howe. Ah, coming up the steps are two more gentlemen. It's proving an interesting morning after all.
I have the latest newspapers with me.
We have them here as well.
Thomas, you shouldn't have come down here from Worcester. You are too well known. There is even a damn southerner in the front parlor who has heard of you.
What do you want me to do? Go into hiding? Admittedly, it has gotten to be quite the fashion. The bright lights of Ottawa are beckoning to quite a few of us now.
Samuel, this affair is going to kill me.
Garrett, there is nothing wrong with you. Just calm down. Take a deep breath. You will be fine.
Do you have any southern newspapers? Those are the ones that matter. Look at this.
If I live another year, it'll be no thanks to the gentlemen of the press. I will see them all in court. I will sue every last one of them for libel.
Gentlemen, Samuel refuses to say anything, and I insist on knowing. Someone has to tell me something.
There is nothing.
We cannot allow the state of Virginia to decide John Brown's fate. If that is the case, his trial is over before it even begins.
I don't believe that particular decision is ours to determine.
Oh, well, well. Franklin Sanborn and George Luther Stearns. Even I have to find all of this visiting a bit odd.
Gentlemen and Mrs. Howe, I see you all have the newspapers. I have my favorite reporting right here. While I admire John Brown's ability to keep a secret, we should have realized it meant when the raid actually happened that none of us would know what the hell he was doing there.
But at least we can all agree. The raid on Harper's Ferry was a success.
A success? What did it accomplish?
We will be blamed.
No one knows the extent of our involvement.
Including myself.
We needed a call to arms. We have that now.
Thomas, what we may be hearing now is the sound of mocking laughter emanating from the southern states. To think after all our efforts, that's all we had to throw at them? Old Man Brown of Osawatomie, Kansas? God, even I think it's rather pathetic.
What do we do now?
We do nothing. Our involvement with John Brown consisted of attending his lectures and hosting an occasional dinner party in his honor.
You think the authorities will accept that?
They have to accept what they know, and what they know is what we tell them.
Smith, I forgot. There's a gentleman waiting to see you in the front parlor. Writes for the New Orleans Tribune. His name is William J. Evanston.
Evanston? He has been pestering me for days. Have him sent away.
No. Let him talk to us.
New Orleans? He doesn't want an interview. Do not trust him.
Who said to trust him? If we talk, he has to talk as well. We need to know what they have learned about us.
Mr. Garrett Smith, thank you for taking time to see me. So you must be Reverend Thomas Wentworth Higginson. Your reputation precedes you, sir.
I'm sure it does.
Is it true you were turned out by your very first congregation for advocating that women have the same political rights as men? I must say, as a happily married man, that's reason enough for me to want to hang you. Mr. Smith, you have spoken publicly of your high regard for Captain John Brown of the Free State Kansas Volunteer Militia.
Yes, indeed.
Were you aware of his activities in Kansas? All of them, before you became such an avid supporter.
If slavery is permitted in the territories, it would become politically unassailable.
Don't you believe in democracy? The settlers in Kansas have every right to vote on whether or not to allow slavery
there. Democracy? What was created out there was anarchy.
Perhaps some of those militias were on the side of the Angels, but not Brown's. He went far beyond just defending his family. Now, you must have known that.
What we know is that John Brown was riding through Missouri when a slave stopped him and begged him to free his family. His wife was about to give birth. Mother and child would be sold as soon as the child was born. John Brown and his men didn't hesitate. They turned their horses around, went to that farm, and freed that man's entire family. They escorted them to freedom through 1,000 miles of unsettled territory in the dead of winter. He is a hero to us. We don't deny it.
Do you know what else John Brown did in Kansas?
Yes, we knew.
Thomas,
he dragged 5 settlers out of their beds in the middle of the night. Unarmed and defenseless, they were hacked to pieces. Murdered within hearing of their women and children. One was only a boy of 16. You gentlemen see the insane logic of it? 5 settlers removed from the election rolls permanently. They can't vote on whether or not to allow slavery in Kansas now, can they?
John Brown denied all involvement in the Pottawatomie Creek Massacre.
I suppose we just have to take his word for it.
Yes, I believe you should.
Mr. Smith, where do you think John Brown got the financial backing for an insurrection? It was a very expensive undertaking. It's odd that he would have such personal funds available.
Mr. Evanston, this is not an interview. It is an interrogation.
What does this have to do with us?
After the raid, a farmhouse where Brown and his men stayed was searched. Scattered around were found a number of letters.
Letters?
Do you gentlemen understand the definition of the word treason? The act of levying war against your own countrymen.
We hardly see Southerners as innocent victims in any of this.
Most Northerners consider slavery much like their weather. Unpleasant, yes, but you get used to it over the years. Heaven itself seems oddly indifferent to all of your godly efforts. Isn't there some temptation to give divine providence a good hard shove?
There are higher laws than society's whims. To serve greater spiritual purpose, laws can, in fact, they should be disobeyed.
Thomas, please stop talking.
Gentlemen, we will conclude this interview with you all at another time.
What was he talking about? What letters?
There were no letters. We ended all communication. Wait, the shipping information?
Invoices, manifests. They would have been with every shipment.
Captain Brown was ordered to destroy all documents as soon as he received them.
When was the last shipment sent before the raid?
A delivery of 26 hymnals 3 days before. Your signature would have been on that manifest.
Then they may have it.
They will learn nothing. Everything was written in code.
Smith, your codes were asinine. The authorities will notice that 26 hymnals were not there, only 26 rifles. I'm sure they'll be able to figure out your code from that.
My heart! It stopped! My medicine!
Garrett, you must calm down. Go upstairs and rest. I'll be upstairs in a moment.
I'll take him.
Samuel, I need to speak with you alone for a few moments. Please come with me to the kitchen.
Could you gentlemen please excuse us?
What I wanted, what I contributed to, was a humanitarian act.
A humanitarian act? Innocent people died, our friends as well.
That was not the plan that was presented to me. I thought they would lead runaway slaves to safety into the mountains. I didn't know they would stand and fight. I did not send those men there to die.
Oh, I didn't know what to think. I sensed you were involved, but I couldn't believe you would have agreed to anything like this.
They could have so easily gotten away. When John saw that no one was coming to his aid, why didn't he retreat into the mountains? They had all night to slip away. Why did they stay and wait to be attacked?
I remember when we first saw John Brown. We went to his lecture with such anticipation. Then I saw that poor, stooped old man. I was so disappointed. Then he turned and looked at me, with eyes blazing so fiercely I had to step back. Sacred fire seemed to flame from the very depths of his soul.
There was what, a half dozen of us as his audience?
His words were his true weapon. Anyone can have a gun, but to have his words... He did it because he wanted to be heard, to have the whole country take notice. Well, they have.
The trial of John Brown took place only a week after the raid. Due to his wounds, he lay on a cot, rising only when directly addressing the court. The courtroom was crowded with hundreds of spectators who shouted curses at the injured man before them. Once there was no room left in the courthouse itself, reporters for newspapers crowded under the windows to hear. Armed guards and cannons encircled the courthouse for fear of a rescue attempt. The only clear thinker in the room was John Brown himself.
I did not ask for any quarter at the time I was taken. I did not ask to have my life spared. The governor of the state of Virginia tendered me his assurance that I should have a fair trial, and under no circumstances whatever will I be able to have a fair trial. If you seek my blood, you can have it at any moment without this mockery of a trial. I'm ready for my fate. I do not ask a trial. I do not know what is to be the benefit of it to the Commonwealth. I have now little to ask, other than that I may not be foolishly insulted as only cowardly barbarians insult those who fall into their power.
He became alarmed only when his supporters wrote begging that an insanity plea be considered. His burning desire to end slavery in the name of God and American democracy might be considered a form of madness. The judge rejected such a plea, but it proved a hard week for professional truth-seekers. They do find the truth every so often, but the plain fact is the public didn't want it. Most Northerners were as shocked about what happened at Harper's Ferry as the Southerners were. Yet the Southerners were feeling so under attack. It was hard to remember the only army destroyed at Harper's Ferry was John Brown's. Hysteria was sweeping the South. It was on the mind of every man, woman, and child in America. What are the supporters of John Brown planning next?
An investigation? If the authorities are going to have us arrested, then why not simply do it? We cannot testify before a congressional committee. We will gain nothing by doing so.
I believe we can testify without incriminating ourselves or anyone else, but it will not be easy. We have to carefully consider everything we say. Above all, we must stand united.
Thomas, what are you doing here? We can't be seen meeting as a group.
I just got back from Concord. I have great news. The Transcendentalists are with us.
The what
now? Oh, God, please, Thomas, I'm begging you. Don't involve them in this.
Why not?
Their words are what we have been waiting for. Here, read this. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote this in just a few hours. We'll publish it every way we can.
Publishing? What are you publishing?
This part I underlined. This is the best. That new saint, whom none purer nor more brave was ever led by love of men into conflict and death. That new saint awaiting his martyrdom, and who, if he shall suffer, will make the gallows glorious like the cross.
Emerson. Well, for a man who adamantly rejects traditional Christian symbolism, he certainly knows how to pull out all the stops.
Henry David Thoreau delivered a plea for Captain Brown yesterday. He considers the raid the finest criminal act in this country since they tossed the tea off of British ships.
Henry, you know, he still owes me $20. Thomas, I question the wisdom in anointing him our speaker for the cause.
He is very effective in what he is saying.
Precisely. And if we ask the Southerners for a fight, they will give us one.
It may not be our choice.
Everything we do is our choice.
Perhaps it isn't. I rode up to North Elba to see John Brown's family. The family knew of the raid, but not much else. I had to be the one to tell his wife that her sons Oliver and Watson were dead, Owen and Johnny in hiding, that her husband most likely would be hanged for treason. The family had only one question in response. Does it seem as if freedom were to gain or lose by this? I had to be honest and say I didn't know, it was too soon to tell. They answered, "If God is with us, then who can be against us? I know you are not religious men, and I respect that. But try to understand what I am experiencing. I have always fought against the theory of predestination, that there is no fate, no destiny, only ourselves, our God, and our free will. Yet, for the first time in my career, in my life, up there with them, I released all doubt. I allowed myself to think that perhaps, just perhaps, we are instruments of God's will. It may be our fate that we be the generation asked to make the ultimate sacrifice for redemption. Redemption, not of mankind, but of the country.
Thomas, your defense of John Brown is very spirited, and that's certainly admirable. But we need to be united in our response and to...
Then this is our moment.
What is that, a fire? It sounds like they're ringing every church bell in Boston. Julia, what's going on? Why are they ringing those bells?
The jury has come back with a verdict.
What? So soon?
They only took a few hours to decide. John Brown has been found guilty on all charges. Guilty of treason against the state of Virginia... Guilty of inciting a slave riot. Guilty of murder. He has been sentenced to death.
Only 3 weeks after the raid, the court pronounced the sentence of death by hanging. Still in pain from his wounds, John Brown rose to his feet and turned to face his accusers. His statement was clear and short, and his remarks were spread by the newspapers throughout the nation.
The New Testament teaches me that all things whatsoever I would that men should do to me, I should do even so to them. It teaches me further to remember them that are in bonds, as bound with them. I endeavor to act up to this instruction. I believe to have interfered as I have done in behalf of the despised poor. I did no wrong. But right. Now, if it is deemed necessary that I should forfeit my life for the furtherance of the ends of justice, mingle my blood further with the blood of millions in this slave country whose rights are disregarded by wicked, cruel, and unjust enactments, I say, let it be done.
There was silence. They could kill him, but they could not answer him.
Frank?
Damn. I was hoping to have someone to drink with, and yonder comes the parson.
What are you doing? What is this?
Smith's best. Have a sip. God in the Temperance Society will understand, I'm sure.
Stearns wanted me to give you this. He took up a collection. Train fare to Canada. If you're sure that's what you want, there is another way.
There is no other way. How much is it?
I don't know. $30 or $40. That's usually what we raise. A bank draft from Forbes for $1,000. Note of credit for $2,000. There has to be about $5,000-$6,000 here. What is this about?
Do you not recognize a bribe when it is waved in your face?
That makes sense. You were secretary. You read every letter, recorded every donation.
Smith is keeping an eye on me on behalf of all the contributors to the cause who prefer to remain anonymous. At least until John Brown and his men all hang.
Don't abandon John Brown like all the rest have.
You want me to stand in front of the crowd? That's going to help free the slaves?
Accept extradition. Go before the committee. Tell them the truth. Expose how corrupt this whole system really is.
You think that would change anything? John Brown told us he had received a message from God in a revelation. The time of reckoning was coming. The time for God's wrath to descend upon this country. It was God's will that he go to slave territory and incite insurrection, not out of hatred, but as a warning to make Southerners see slavery was born in violence, maintained in violence. It will end in violence.
The South is not as invincible as they have made us think they are. If there was a war, we could win.
I could have gone with them to Harper's Ferry. I didn't. Deep down, I knew how it would end. They were willing to die to end slavery, and I wasn't. When I made that pledge to him, I knew it was false. It was.
You haven't failed him. Not yet. Not completely. Stay here and defy those unjust laws.
I have to make my own choice. John Brown chose his fate, and I will choose
this
mine.
This is not the way to do it. Fleeing to Canada to avoid arrest.
I'm not going to reveal the names of those who trusted me. I'm sorry if that makes me a disappointment to John Brown or to you. Here, give this back. Tell them I don't need their money to keep their secrets.
No, take it. They don't want any favors from you. They prefer to buy your silence.
John Brown, if you visit him, if you write him, tell him I'm sorry. Sorry about everything.
It's a little late for that. He's hanging in 3 days.
That's right, I forgot. 3 days.
Here. Go ahead. Finish your forgetting. Don't worry. There are plenty of people to see that you get to Canada just fine, drunk or sober. Have a safe trip.
Mr. Evanston, I was told you were here. As Mr. Smith's attending physician, I must insist that you leave at once.
I've already been informed that Mrs. Smith is too ill to conclude my interview.
Please feel free to inform your readership that owing to your newspaper's reckless charges of sedition against him, Mr. Smith has suffered a complete mental collapse.
It has not escaped my readership's notice that Garrett Smith's mental collapses seem to come and go along with any responsibility toward the latest crack brain cause he has financed.
I don't believe he needs to be insulted in his own home. Please, allow me to personally escort you to the front steps.
Actually, I was hoping to speak with you.
Really? Why would you need to confer with me?
I simply wish to offer you a gift. Mr. Charles Darwin's work, The Origin of the Species. Are you familiar with it?
Of course I am. I've lectured on the subject. I consider his theories to be brilliant.
Would it surprise you to know that I do as well?
It would surprise me a great deal. Have a pleasant day, sir.
I also wish to inquire, as one reasonable man to another, whether you're aware of what is transpiring up in Worcester.
Worcester?
Charming village, located north of Boston, the home of many artists and poets and free spirits. Quite a thriving little artist colony. It is also the location of Thomas Higginson's Free Church.
Apparently there is a subject we can agree on. Worcester is lovely.
I didn't get a chance to discover that for myself. I went hoping to interview Reverend Higginson, so I went there by train. I got to the station, I inquired of the master, directions to his residence. Behind me I heard the sound of revolvers being cocked. Not a sound typically associated with artist colonies. I turned around, slowly, of course. There were several young men with guns pointed directly at my forehead. Introductions were not forthcoming. However, I take it they were the Worcester Unitarian Reception Committee. They seemed to feel Worcester was not my sort of a town. I should consider moving on. They were very nice. They politely escorted me back onto the train with their guns courteously drawn.
I have known Thomas for many years. He is not the sort of man to advocate violence.
I suspect I am much more familiar with that aspect of humanity, and let me assure you, Thomas is exactly that sort of a man. As we Southerners race to place a martyr's crown on the sacred brow of John Brown, my guess is that Thomas is preparing to anoint himself leader of the next army of God. Now, you must admit, one was enough.
Why are you telling me this?
From what I've heard, we have a great deal in common, you and I. We believe in science. No species gets struck blind on the road to Damascus. No form of animal life throws itself into the fire at God's command. In evolution, things change slowly, gradually, in its own time.
You want me to believe that slavery will simply evolve out of existence?
Why not?
Because it makes too many men very rich and very powerful.
What I admire most about Darwin's theory is how everything is so interconnected, so symbiotically entwined. Those too many men who are very rich and very powerful are patrons of many charities, including your own. Now, I understand there's been talk amongst them regarding withdrawing their pledges from your institution.
I've not heard of any such thing.
Your work among the less fortunate is much admired. However, your name is appearing in newspapers, dragged there by your unfortunate choice in friendships. Your Southern patrons may tolerate the rag of a newspaper you publish, but aiding and abetting slave revolts, which threaten them with the destruction of their property, their livelihoods, even their possible murders? Well, even they have to draw the line somewhere.
What do you want?
It's not what I want. It's what the country needs. The truth. Exactly what was planned and who was involved.
I can't give you that.
Well, I didn't think that you could. You didn't know what he was really planning, did you?
I believe you should leave now, sir. Take back your gift. I have several copies already.
He had only one chance, one try. He knew that's all he was good for. It had to count. His choice of a target was brilliant, a military arsenal. Now, slave insurrections are frightening enough with white men joining in now and military weapons. Well, that's what produced the panic. We weren't expecting that.
We did not do this to start a war.
Perhaps you didn't, but John Brown did.
We have tried to present peaceful alternatives.
You abolitionists attack without provocation, spill our blood, and then presume to give us a high-minded lecture on the need for reasonable compromises?
What are you hoping to achieve by telling me this?
Pull the country back from the brink where John Brown has taken it. You can save yourself, your professional achievements. You can save the country itself. Come forward and give evidence against the ones most in league with Brown. You may not know everything, but you know enough.
Most in league?
The trusted few among the trusted few. Parker, Higginson, Sanborn.
Franklin Sanborn arrived safe and sound in Canada yesterday. And you saw for yourself what sort of welcome federal marshals would receive in Worcester if they try to arrest Thomas there.
That is why it is necessary for you to come forward. The rest of you may be more trouble than you're worth to extradite to Virginia. Stearns is too influential, Smith is too ill, you're too reasonable, Parker's too dead. Two out of six brought to justice is a reasonable number. Think of it as a goodwill gesture. Assure us that your intentions are honorable before any further talk of a compromise. For God's sake, the fact that they are guilty as sin should play some role in our deliberations here.
That's impossible.
No. What is impossible is to watch this country hysterically race toward a civil war and do nothing to try and stop it. You have a short period of time to make this right. Otherwise, trust me. After John Brown and his men are hanged as martyrs to the north and traitors to the south, it will take a miracle to stop a war. And remember, Dr. Howe, neither one of us believes in miracles.
On the day of his hanging, John Brown wrote one last statement before he went to his execution.
I, John Brown, am now quite certain that the crimes of this guilty land will never be purged away, but with blood. I had, as I now think, vainly flattered myself that without very much bloodshed, it might be done.
In the North, a groundswell of support for John Brown fed into a massive show of grief and sympathy on his execution day. As his funeral train entered the North, thousands waited hours to greet the hero's return. His coffin was paraded through the streets and laid in state for 2 days in New York. Many who had ignored or ridiculed him when he was alive now rushed forward to deliver his eulogy. Oddly, at the same time, one of John Brown's most staunch supporters, Dr. Samuel Howe, sent a statement to the New York Tribune in which he denied prior knowledge of the Virginia raid. He wrote in the newspaper that rumor has mingled my name with the events at Harper's Ferry, but that event was unforeseen and unexpected by me. Nor does all my previous knowledge of John Brown enable me to reconcile it with his characteristic prudence and his reluctance to shed blood or excite servile insurrection. It is still, to me, a mystery and a marvel.
Is there no such thing as honor among Confederates?
I don't believe I care for the tone in your voice, Thomas.
Get used to it.
My letter did not denounce John Brown. I denounced myself.
John Brown would not be impressed by that logic. He never was by the well-thought-out, precise logic of hypocrites.
Hypocrites? How dare you presume, sir? You could have gone to Harper's Ferry with him. Oh, yes, yes, true, you have a wife and small children, but so did he. That didn't stop him.
I was involved from the very beginning. When I go before the Congressional Committee investigating Harper's Ferry, I will tell the truth. I don't care where that leads me now. I will be happy to be the one to expose this rotten system.
The committee itself has been taken aback by the emotion generated by this trial. They are no more anxious to throw fuel on this fire than we are.
You have spoken to members of the committee? Without informing me?
Oh, the congressman has heard of you, and he's offended that a minister of word and sacrament questions the divine origins of Christ. He will not permit your hand to be placed upon Holy Scripture for the vow of testimony.
You can't be serious. You cannot determine my fate in this matter.
Yes, we can, and yes, we will. We are not doing it for the asking.
It is my life.
You may be ready to fling yourself into religious self-sacrifice, but George and I will not allow it. Having seen one dear friend throw himself into the sacred fire of martyrdom, we will stop you from doing so. If need be, we will haul you out by your ankles.
Captured Harper's Ferry with 19 men so true. He frightened old Virginia till it trembled through and through. They hung him for a traitor. They themselves the traitor grew. His soul goes marching on. You, sir, over there. Throw some coins in the cup for poor Widow Brown. A gold dollar. The Brown family blesses you, sir.
I doubt that considerably. So tell me, you all appear Irish. Are you new to this country?
Stepped on the street I am repairing just last spring.
Why this passionate interest in the question of states' rights?
We are poor men, sir, but free. Tell me, sir, did you read John Brown's last speech to the court when he was sentenced to be hung as a traitor?
Yes, it was on the front page of every newspaper, including my own.
Righteous words, sir. Remember those who are in bonds, as if bound with them. Reading the speeches of Mr. Brown
It was almost as if I were awakened from a deep sleep.
I don't wish to take any longer from your street repair duties. I'd just like to know one thing if you could tell me. Who is taking up this little collection of yours?
Reverend Higginson. His name's right here on the flyer. He will be leading the rally tonight, right here in the square. Preaches like the Pope, but in English. You can understand every word that he says.
I'm mystified as to how that will be to his advantage.
There he is over there. Do you want to meet him?
Yes, I see him. I could speak a few moments with him. Well, Thomas, I see you're stirring up the immigrants now. You are a busy man.
Oh, yes, I remember you. The newspaper man.
Just to let you know, I'm leaving Boston, so the coast is clear. Congratulations, Thomas. You all won.
I don't know what you mean.
The Congressional Committee has accepted everything Dr. Howe and Mr. Stearns told them, which was hogwash. They know it's hogwash, but it's hogwash everyone can live with. The committee investigating the raid on Harper's Ferry is concluding without anyone accused of anything. Except the ones who were executed, of course. Your scruffy little band of dreamy-eyed free thinkers all got away with murder. That'd be my definition of the word winning.
I was willing to tell the truth.
What sort of an improvement do you think that would have been? You'd open your mouth and it would change everything? Don't flatter yourself, Thomas. This is all past us now. I thought you intellectuals did not believe in martyrs and saints. You left that to more superstitious minds like these Irishmen sweeping your streets. You may not believe in martyrs, but you certainly know how to create one when you need one.
John Brown was a friend of mine. I admired him greatly.
That must have been the hard part. You and Brown both so proud of your Puritan ancestors. If anyone understood him, through and through, it was you. You knew what he was capable of doing. You stepped aside and you let him do it.
When the soul of John Brown hung between heaven and earth, that moment marked the end of slavery in America. I did not see it then, but I see it now.
Are you aware that you six have destroyed the political careers of every supporter the abolitionists had in Washington? They're looking for compromisers now, not many to be found. Even, nominating for president a lawyer born in Kentucky, serving in the state of Illinois, named Abraham Lincoln. Kentucky looks like a southern state if you can't see very well. Southerners know how political criminals in the North are protected. They're expected to keep the peace by accepting any compromise tossed their way. Oh, it will not be enough.
Mr. Evanston, you are interested in me, and I am interested in you as well. My guess is you are not as comfortable with slavery as you wish you were. But you are on the top rung of the ladder, and no one is going to push you off. It is easier to be a self-made man when few others are allowed the same opportunity. In New Orleans, you have every advantage, and you know it. Why alter a system that has given you everything, no matter how reprehensible even you find it? Interesting. We get a lecture from you about moral compromises.
Well, that's your opinion, sir. That's just your opinion. Just as some interest to you, it may be, I'll tell you. I'm resigning my position with the Tribune.
Really? Resigning? What are you going to do?
I've accepted an officer's commission.
With all due respect, I don't see you as an officer in the United States military.
Neither do I. Louisiana is organizing its own military force to protect ourselves from any future abolitionist invasion. Should you and your friends try again, we will be ready.
I will let everyone know.
Before I go, Reverend Higginson, a question on a religious matter. Just curious as I am, if John Brown died to end slavery in America, so if he were to go to heaven, as I'm sure you firmly believe, are all those five defenseless men he murdered in cold blood at Pottawatomie Creek there as well to greet him?
Reverend, are you all right?
I didn't mean to knock him down. It just came over me.
That's right, Uppercut. I've seen from a clergyman since our beloved Father Fitzgerald passed away. Let me help you up. You better leave the Reverend alone, or I'll lay into you myself.
Mr. Evanston, you are bleeding.
It's nothing, Thomas. I just got your bloodlust up. Everyone swore you didn't have it. Great intellectual that you are, but I knew it was there. You better get used to a little blood being spilled, Thomas. You're going to see plenty of that before long. Tell me something, preacher. Have you ever hunted bears?
What?
Bear hunting. You ever do it?
No, never.
Saw it when I was a boy. See, you get an old hunting dog, one that's outlived its usefulness, and you send that old hunting dog right into the bear's den. The dog attacks the bear, riles it up. The bear usually tears that dog to pieces. Now that gets the bear's bloodlust up. It roars out of its den, crazy with all this anger, and then falls right into a trap. Now, I thought John Brown was a crazy fool. Now I think he was a cunning old bear hunter. That was the real plan, wasn't it? Attack us into the South, get us riled up good, get us all snarled up, start a war we got no business fighting? I didn't think you abolitionists had it in you. Until then, it seemed your dire tactics were confined to writing nasty letters to the newspapers.
I hope you enjoyed those days of our letter writing, because they are gone now.
I heard you had children, Thomas.
Yes, I have.
I got five. They're all boys. My oldest is turning 13 this week.
No.
I was there at Harper's Ferry. When they kicked in the door, old Cap'n Brown was leaning to one side, firing his gun in just one hand. He had one of his sons dead at his feet. He was leaning to the one side because he was checking the pulse of his other son dying next to him. John Brown waited all night for that final assault, listening to his sons suffer and die, leaning against him. Apparently, one was so hurt he begged his father to shoot him, put him out of his misery, but the old man wouldn't. See, I'm not John Brown. I'm not relishing the thought of throwing my boys into that pot. Whatever's going to happen, we're going to just let it happen. Brown said a whole generation might have to be sacrificed to end this. I got nothing against it making it our generation, but not my boys' generation. For better or worse, we just got to end this.
It may not come to that.
Oh, it's coming to that. Oh, you better believe it's coming to that. Well, Thomas, if we happen to run into each other again, I suspect we'll be on opposite sides of a battlefield. No need for you to wave. Oh, I'll know that you're there.
On the question of slavery, there could be no further compromise. After his raid and execution, the entire country had heard and accepted that conviction of John Brown. Emotions that before had been confined to the parlors of abolitionists and plantation owners now spilled to the general population, until violence sparked by the raid reached a crescendo in the cannon fire on Fort Sumter. The Civil War was underway.
You've been listening to Sacred Fire. Our cast included Walter Rhodes, Tony Dallas, Dan Davis, Howard Shook, Doug Hinckley, Miriam Eckenrode, Jason Sein, Gary Reimers, Ron Seamer, Troy Lindsay, Jonathan Platt, and Rob Campbell. Sacred Fire was written by Kay Reimers, directed by Dan Davis. Produced by Jerry Kenny and Kay Reimers. Sound design and editing by Jerry Kenny. Original music by Nikki Dakota. Sacred Fire is a production of WYSO, Public Radio, and the Living History Theater in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Find out more at our website at wyso.org.